straighten out something which is crooked. And we know that so much human effort goes into trying to get things lined up straight. Has anyone here ever put up a fence in your yard or across your meadow or your garden? You know how hard it is to get the fence to go straight if that's what you want. Our roads, our buildings. I'm not a carpenter, but my carpenter friends tell me it's always a struggle to get things straight, especially when working with wood, which is a natural substance that doesn't really want to go in straight lines. Trees, thank God, don't go in straight lines. And so much of our world is not straight. It's twisted and crooked in the most wonderful way. You know, who would want to go hiking on a trail that's absolutely straight? No one would enjoy that. So we love the twists and turns of our reality. But human activity is often focused on straightening something out. So we see the word tikkun used in this way in the Hebrew Bible. And we also see it used in the Talmudic literature that comes after the Hebrew Bible to straighten something out, like to straighten out a metal staff, to put it in the fire and pound it and make it straight. So let's have a little, nigun. A nigun is a wordless melody. It's nice whenever we study to relearn a little, and then we pause and we have a little music and it helps us take it in. So you might want to think about that great human effort that goes into straightening things out. So when I sing a song, please, I'll be honored and delighted if you will stretch, dance, roll your shoulders, move around. It won't distract. Tikkun. We're trying to straighten things out in this messy, disorganized, twisted and turning world. And as we move along in Talmudic thinking, this term also becomes applied not just to the physical world, but we hear the same term in a social context. And then we get the term tikkun olam. I'm sure many of you have heard of. Tikkun olam. Olam is a wonderful word in Hebrew that can mean many things, but in this context, it especially means community, the one's personal world, the intimate community. And the rabbis of the Talmud definitely meant it to be the Jewish community. So tikkun olam is to straighten something out in your social sphere. And it's a nice, I like to keep the memory of that physical straightening to remember that we can get back to sort of an original unity in our relationships. We want to get back to a wholesomeness in our communal relationships. In the Talmud, the same term also gets used to repair, to mend, to to restore something to its original state. It also can mean to perfect, as in to make a more perfect union. And it also is used to mean to remedy. It's especially used for remedy in the legal sense. In fact, one of the earliest uses of the term tikkun olam was in reference to family law, to divorce cases, because divorce has always been permissible in Jewish tradition. And even 2000 years ago, there were rules on how the children of a divorce would be treated to protect their legal status, to protect the legal status of a divorced wife. And of course, this was considered essential for social harmony and to fulfill the biblical mandate to be fruitful and multiply, which humanity certainly has done. So that is our context for the term 2000 years ago. Now we want to fast forward about 2000 years, and we come right up to the 1980s. And in the 1980s, Jewish activists, Jewish educators, and rabbis started to embrace the term tikkun olam and to use it in a way that really was new, to repurpose the word for themselves. And instead of having the olam, the community, be limited to the immediate Jewish community, they saw it as the repair, the restoration, the straightening out of the whole world. And they extended this to a universal focus. And they used this term tikkun olam to speak of what they felt as a Jewish imperative to work for social and environmental justice. So instead of a narrow focus or an intimate focus, their focus became truly worldwide. And the rabbis in the 1980s who embraced this term, especially my wonderful teacher, Rabbi Arthur Wasko, these rabbis connected this desire, this impulse for tikkun olam back to the Hebrew prophets, the very ancient writers who gave us images of social justice, of rectification of ills done to the widows, the disadvantaged, the orphans, the poor. So the ancient Hebrew prophets, you know, Jeremiah and Isaiah and Micah really railed against the excesses of their societies. They spoke very passionately for protection of the disadvantaged. And in the 1980s, we made a big 2,500 year leap back to connect with those prophets with really a very universal approach. And tikkun olam becomes a term that we think of as extending to the whole world, not just our community. It's the Jewish way of doing social and environmental justice. Some of you may have subscribed back in 1986 when Tikkun magazine came out. The wonderful Rabbi Michael Lerner in the Bay Area put together this very exciting and dense magazine, which is still going, that focuses on the Jewish approach to justice issues. In the past 40 years, this idea of tikkun olam has become absolutely central to Jewish American identity. That's not necessarily the case for Jewish communities abroad, in Britain or in France, where we have large communities in South America or in Israel. Different ways of centering tikkun olam. Here in the States, Jewish American communities, by and large, center tikkun olam. And when interviewed, Jewish Americans will say that it's absolutely core to their identity as Jews. It's the thing, first and foremost, they feel they must do as Jews. Not necessarily keep kosher, not necessarily observe all the traditional rituals and rules, but they feel a great imperative for this, the call of social justice. That's where we are. That's where we are right today. And I would say that our congregation here in Eureka Temple Bethel has a very strong social justice component. I want to add another understanding on the term, which is something from my teacher, Rabbi Zalman Schachter Shalomi of blessed memory. And this is a little bit, Reb Zalman has his own approach to philology, to language, and he was always taking Hebrew terms apart and giving us new, exciting understandings. So I told you that the word tikkun is three letters, the Taf, the Kuf, and the Nun. And Reb Zalman says that we could see the Taf, the initial letter, as a performative letter, something that shifts the meaning, but is not essential to the root. Remember earlier we spoke of the roots that drive the verbs in Hebrew. So Reb Zalman says, forget the Taf. We don't even need it in the root. We can have a two-letter root, which is the Kuf and the Nun. And if we could be more participatory, I would ask people to, you know, tell me, you Torah scholars there, what's the Kuf and the Nun? I know some of you here know it. It is, of course, the word Kan, which means nest, like Kan Sipur, the nest of a bird. And I love the connotations that we get when we think about nest building. You know, so often for our justice endeavors, we have to take a confrontational stance. We have to be calling people and organizations out on misbehavior. But I also love the feeling you get, the sensibility, when you think of Tikkun Olam as Kan Sipur, as building the nest, as building a society, a container for nurturance, for wholesome evolution, for all the things that we want to see for our children, for our grandchildren. It's just a beautiful take on it. So I love that. I love dropping the Taf and just saying, oh, Tikkun, it's about nesting. It's about nest building. And I think we can really relate to that here in Humboldt because, you know, we have such a love, we have so many beautiful bird species here. And we have so many beautiful festivals. If we had time, I would stop and ask everybody to unmute and tell me your favorite local bird. Call one to mind right now. Call to mind a local bird. Got one? And a little exercise too. Flap your wings. Become that bird for a minute. Is it an osprey? Is it a golden eagle? Out here on the Van Dusen, from time to time, we see the ospreys. And oh my gosh, last summer we saw golden eagles. Very exciting. Very exciting. Or is it a little Oregon junco? Or is it a kingfisher? We see kingfishers zooming down the Van Dusen so fast, so fast, so fast. And the ouzel, is it an ouzel? Those little birds that dive into the water and swim just as fast underground as in the air, I mean, underwater. Amazing. Oh, and while I'm speaking of the Van Dusen, let me add also, I really appreciate Katie did a lovely acknowledgement of the land and the peoples who have lived here in Humboldt. And out here in Carlotta, we are also on land that was the ancestral home of the Nongatl people. And very little is known about them, though there are little remnants of their language being studied. So I feel an obligation to think about them. In my long life on the river here, I've lived out here for 30 plus years, I can't remember, more than 30 years. I feel pretty settled now after 30 years. I think I'm ready to unpack and really settle in. So when we think of birds, when we think of nest building, it's a beautiful piece to add to our social and environmental justice concerns because we can really let our nurturing selves out when we think of those activities. I'm going to share another idea with you from Rev Zalman, my great teacher. As many of you are probably aware, the idea of Mashiach, of a Messiah, is very, very old in Jewish tradition. It goes back thousands of years. And just about 2,000 years ago, the term Mashiach would be meant to refer to a hoped for military leader who would have helped expel the Romans, correct the injustices of the Roman occupation, and bring the people political sovereignty. So Mashiach would be anointed with oil, as leaders would be, and bring the people forward. Also, of course, famously in the book of Isaiah, we hear of Mashiach ben David, the Messiah, the son of David, and that the days of Mashiach will be so peaceful that the lion will lie down with the lamb, etc. I don't know if I really want lions lying down with lambs. I kind of like the natural order in which lions chase smaller critters, but I don't want to criticize. That was the idiom back then. So we have, of course, Christianity has embraced the idea of Mashiach, of Messiah, and Jewish tradition has kept it alive in the minds of some of our co-religionists. Messiah, Mashiach, would be an individual who is going to appear somewhere in the world and lead us into a state of redemptive harmony. For most people in the progressive Jewish community, either they have left Mashiach behind as vestiges of an older, perhaps even superstitious kind of past, or they have transmuted the concept into something very beautiful, as my teacher Reb Zalman did, that he would say, Mashiach will come when consciousness flowers, when consciousness blooms, and that as consciousness expands in each one of us and for each one of us, we are gradually building Mashiach awareness. So we have a beautiful picture of a spiral of life, and Jewish tradition has a very strong feeling that we have somewhere to go and that we are getting there. All of our daily activities and our holiday activities move us closer and closer to a better place. It's inherently optimistic tradition. There's a deep optimism there, despite a history of tremendous suffering. It's a very optimistic tradition. So Reb Zalman equates Mashiach consciousness with the healing of the planet, with the complete tikkun, the repair of all the harm that's been done to our planet and to our social structures, and this blossoming of higher consciousness broadly. And he also used to teach, he said that each of us has a shtickle of Mashiach. So shtickle is Yiddish for what's a shtick? A shtick is a stick. And what's a shtickle? It's a little stick. So he said, everybody has a shtickle Mashiach, a little bit of Messiah, of messianic energy, of Mashiach consciousness is in each one of us. And years ago, I had a kind of a little chidush when I was doing a presentation with Reb Zalman of blessed memory. And I realized, oh, with that shtickle of Mashiach that we each have, some talent, some insight, some energy, some little piece that we each have, with that, we can literally help build the nest for expanded awareness and for harmony and justice on the planet. So just as birds will build their nest, each little shtickle of this and that, a little stick, a little feather, a little clump of dried grass. Very exciting. We had an eagle nest right down behind our house for a couple of years, and it was just magnificent to see. We didn't see it till it was already in a state of decay, but I thought, what is that? It looked like a big bowl. And it was spectacular. It was so beautiful. Just not unlike the one at the zoo that they have, that kids can climb into. So each of us has our shtickle, and we get to build a little bit of Mashiach awareness with what's given to us. So you might want to think for just a minute about, what is your shtickle? What is the special skill or the special talent or the special understanding that you have that you could put into that nest? It may be something obvious, it may be something subtle. Let's take a couple minutes, everybody, just think about that. What is your shtickla to build this beautiful nest? We're helping build this nest. Another idea I want to share with you about this term Tikkun Olam is how it appears in our prayer service. And at the end of every service, we have a prayer called the Aleinu, which says it is upon us to give praise, to be positive, to be appreciative. And there's a section in that prayer that says, "L'taken olam b'malchut Shaddai." And it's usually translated as, "to perfect the world for the kingdom of God, for the kingdom of the divine." And the name that's used for God here is very interesting. "L'taken olam b'malchut Shaddai." Shaddai is a beautiful word that both can refer somewhat to a mother's breasts, very nurturing image, but it also rooted in the word that means enough, sufficient. Like some of you know from Passover Seders, what do we sing? Dai Dainu, Dai Dainu, Dai Dainu, Dai Dainu. It would have been enough. It's enough for us. Dainu. We want to say it's enough. And so this comes from a rabbinic legend that says that in the beginning of the days of creation, when the waters are forming on the earth, the waters were kind of surging all over the earth, and to contain them in the oceans and the seas, the creator said, die, literally die, enough. That's enough, contain yourselves. Baruch She'amar Dai, the one who says die, enough. And Reb Zalman has a beautiful teaching on this also. He suggests that when we say this, l'takein, to tikkun the world for the Malchut Shaddai, that we can translate it this, that we could restore the world to enter the reign of sufficiency. I love that, to enter an understanding of what is sufficient. And this is really a very radical teaching because it upends our culture. You know, our culture is driven by this economic engine that always tells us that nothing is sufficient. We never have enough. We just never have enough. Our culture is, we just get that message all the time from the popular culture. If you have, you know, I love this sweater. I have it in green. I should go back and see if they have it in blue, because wouldn't that be nice to have it in blue also? You know, I have a house in Carlotta. I could have a house in town. If I were a rich person, I could have this. If I, you know, you all know, I think I'm speaking to a group of people who are really attuned to the understanding that we cannot indulge this longing for more, more, more anymore. We have to be able to say, this is sufficient for me, for my family, for my community, for my county, for my state, for my country, for my world. We just have to get to the point of saying, this is sufficient, and to be satisfied. So there's a beautiful teaching in this. When we say the Aleinu, next time we do it, we'll go to this line, to tikkun, to realign the world for a time of sufficiency, where it's a paramount value, where we can say, this is sufficient, this is enough for me, so that there will be sufficient resources for others, to acknowledge the unequal distribution of resources. So that's all built here into our understanding of this simple little term, Tikkun Olam. So I want to invite you, my dears at home, to do something with me. Grab a piece of paper if you have one handy nearby. Anybody still use paper and pencil or pens? You still have them? Yeah, you know, mine run out of battery all the time. My pencil, it's not charged up when I need it, right? And when the internet goes down, my paper doesn't work anymore, right? No, I'm teasing you. Paper and pencil are just, they're just good old-fashioned tools, aren't they? And I want to suggest that you take a piece of paper, it can be lined or unlined, and just draw a line right down the center. Not across, but down the center. It can be any size piece of paper. Draw a line down the center. So you'll have two columns. All righty. Great. I see everybody going for their papers and pencils. People still seem to have that. That's wonderful. That's great. That's great. Oh, fun. I'm looking and seeing all these people. I'm just checking up on you. Ruth Carol Silver, hi. Hello, Ruth. Carol Ruth Silver, how wonderful. Oh, I see all kinds of friends and from all over the world. Wow. Okay, you have a column here. So very simple little exercise. I just want you to brainstorm with yourself, review your life, and make a little list of the activities that you do habitually or that you've done in the past as part of Tikkun Olam, as part of the straightening out what is awry in the community, as part of building the nest of sufficiency, part of your social justice, environmental justice work. Just make a list of the activities, whether it's making phone calls, sending postcards, whatever it is. Just jot down a bunch of things. See plenty of people here with gray hair, and I know many of us have been at this for decades, and there's a lot to say. So just make a little list, a little review of what you've been up to. Activities. A lot of your life energy has gone into doing these things. Whether for your immediate community or for the community at large, for your household or for other households, We're not keeping score here. We're just reflecting on where did our life energy go? Little song from the book of Psalms about treasuring each day, translated by my friend Rabbi Yitzhak, husband Hank, and Eugene. And some of you know it in Hebrew and in English, and please sing along. It's very easy to follow. So sing along quietly at home, of course. Opportunity to do that little shtickla of Mashiach that you have to add your little piece to the great work of moving humanity and the planet forward. We get up and feel like each day, this is another precious day. I get to do what I can do. It's a lot better than, oi, another day, I have to do this again. It's a lot better. Another day. I get to contribute again. I get to contribute. We can see part of the suffering of this isolation in the pandemic is not being able to contribute for each other in the simple ways. I don't get to open the door for anybody. Simple things. I don't get to hand somebody something that will help them outside of my immediate family here. So many ways we're limited. We're hardwired to give and to contribute. So we treasure every day because it's an opportunity to contribute.
Teach us to treasure each day. Teach us to treasure each day. Treasure.
I'm sure that on our lists, many of us put the things that we, you know, we would expect to think of. If they have something they would like to share that surprised them, surprised you to see it on your own list, you realize, oh, goodness, wow, that's part of my Tikkun Olam and my nest building too. Please raise your hand if you would like to share. It would be lovely to hear some of your voices. And between Katie and Pat and Val and myself, we'll try to see anybody who wants to share something from your list. I see thoughtful faces, but I don't see hands. Carol Ruth Silver, my dear friend.
Well, because I have lived in a political world for all of my professional life, I would say that one of the most important things that I've done recently is support the Black Lives Matter movement. And I am very proud that my grandson, who is about 20, called me and said that he was going to this Black Lives Matter movement event in San Francisco. And was I going to be there as well? And I just quelled at this transmission that though I had not done it directly, that somehow he had acquired the same attitude toward Tikkun Olam that I wanted, that I would have wanted to convey to him had I done it.
Well, somehow you did it. It happened. You know, if we have epigenetic trauma that is heritable, surely we must have some good values that are heritable also. It wouldn't be fair the other way around, would it? And Carol Ruth Silver, of course, sat on the San Francisco Board of Supervisors back with Supervisor Feinstein back in the day. And she has
and Harvey fabulous, Mills.
And Harvey Mills and Supervisor Harvey Mills. Yeah. And she is, we're so happy to have her as a member of the Southern Humboldt Jewish community when she's up in Southern Humboldt. Oh, Marjorie has a painting to show. How can we do this? Pat, Val, Katie, we want to allow Marjorie Feldman to screen share or open up screen sharing, whatever is easiest. I don't know how to do that. She has a magnificent painting I want everyone to see. Can we do that for her? Let's see. Marjorie, make sure everybody, I saw your name in the chat. Make sure that, okay, Marjorie has gone to, without even screen sharing. No, she's just taking her camera. Marjorie, you need to talk so that we can see where you are.
Here I am. I can just show it. Can I just show it by flipping my camera?
Yes, of course.
Since we were talking about Black Lives Matter.
I forgot it. It's a painting, not...
It's a painting that I did as a tikkun for George Floyd and Black Lives Matter. Can everyone see it?
I suggest to everyone that you go to speaker view, and Marjorie, you keep speaking, and then you can get up close and see this incredible work.
I do have it as a photo. Would that be better?
No, this is just lovely.
Okay. So this was done for the Day of the Dead, and the flowers surrounding it are, I used marigold blossoms and dipped them into paint and printed them all around as a healing. And the fragrance of the marigold is supposed to help the soul rise. So when Carol was speaking, I just thought of that. So this is in my front hall, and I look at it, and my everyone who comes here looks at it all the time. So I hope that I can transmit the same way you expressed that, Carol, to my family, the importance of Tikkun Olam.
Oh, thank you, Marjorie. Isn't that magnificent? It's just an absolutely beautiful painting. Oh, this is our dear friend, Marjorie Feldman, who is joining us from her home in Roseburg, Oregon. Wow. Thank you, dear. Thank you so much. Do I have anyone else who would like to share? Yes, Pat and Cheryl. Pat and Cheryl, would you please start speaking? Unmute yourselves and start speaking so that we can get you in speaker view.
Cheryl has gone to get her piece. She'll bring it back soon.
Wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful. We see beautiful.
My name is Cheryl. When I do artwork, I'm Cheryl Peterson Rao. These are my maiden name as well. And I was in the hospital on January 6th. And I drew this one from the TV. And this one was my room. This is from the New Yorker cover, here and here. Down here is the Senate behind chairs and on their bellies. This is crowds. This is looking out the window. There's a bird in contrast to the Capitol and the smoke and the protesters. And I usually do beautiful landscapes, etc. As my contribution, I always figure that when you can give people beauty, you're contributing to the community in that way. And I think my other thing is I'm an early childhood teacher in my day life career back when, and I did the religious education at the UU, Humboldt Unitarian Universalist place. And, you know, that's a nurturing thing. That is another part of that. And when I do things with small children, I always do art. Yeah, pull
wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you. A very powerful collage. A very powerful and wonderful collage. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. And I see. Pat, did you have something you wanted to say, dear?
Oh, no. Nothing but that. She's a poet.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Thank you. Hank, did I see your hand up?
Yeah.
You want to share something?
Well, yes, sure. What I have doesn't fit on a screen. I have a novel that I wrote on the prophet Jeremiah, who, of course, speaking of prophets. But what I really wanted to share was that, like Carol, I raised a daughter, and we don't, my wife and I are both very political people, but our daughter is majoring in political science, UC Davis, and she's also on internship. She's working on political campaigns, and she plans to make that her life work, is Tikkun Olam in that form. So I don't know what we did right, but we must have done something right.
Mazel tov. Mazel tov. That's great. That's wonderful. Anybody else want to share something on their Tikkun Olam life list? Do I see any other hands? Going once, looking at hands. Mata Esther, I can't believe I see your face, dear. That's amazing. That's amazing. Are you in Jerusalem?
Yes.
Oh.
One of my, I want to show you something. This is just, as long as you're not asking about what we did today, and you're asking what's part of our life. This is what I did in my life. One of the things that I did in my life, I came to March for Our Lives down in Eureka with Naomi. I drove down from Portland and when I was living in America, and I came down to March for Our Lives, which was a very powerful march against gun violence. And this week is my father's 50th Yahrzeit, and he was taken by gun violence 50 years ago. And I have done whatever I've been able to do, Moms Against Guns, coming to this event, passing to my children, on to my children, this concept. And it's upsetting. It's upsetting.
I'll see you when you get here.
So anyway, thank you for listening.
Oh, thank you, dear. That's amazing to see the button from here in Eureka, and you took it with you.
Well, and your song that previewed, that your powerful song, Rabbi Naomi, that you wrote, that you previewed that at that march.
Good. Glad to see it. And I had a note of somebody else who wanted to speak. And let me look here. I'm pretty good at searching through let me see. It was in the chat. And Meg Stolfsky, do you want to speak there? And would you please unmute yourself?
I unmuted myself. I'm recovering from pneumonia, so I don't have a lot of breath. But what surprised me, which was your question, what surprised me on my list was practicing gratitude and finding joy as part of Tikkun Olam. I didn't expect that because I do the recycle and the and I have for 60 whatever years it is now. So all of those things and anti-gun and show up and justice for Josiah, which is part of my life. But finding practicing gratitude turned up on my list for whatever it's worth. Thank you. And thank you for doing this. It was beautiful. Fills my heart with joy.
Ah. Great. Thank you so much, Meg. That's great. And you're moving right in the direction of where I want to go with the rest of the program. That's wonderful. That's great. That'll take us on. And Meg's lovely sharing will make a lovely segue to move into the next discussion. Now, we've looked at Tikkun Olam, and the other term that's in the title for our program is Tikkun Nefesh. So we know tikkun is straightening, supporting, restoring, building the nest. So what is this word nefesh? It's a wonderful word. And what does tikkun nefesh mean? So we looked at some biblical meanings and some Talmudic meanings of the word tikkun. And then in the medieval period, especially under the influence of philosophers who wrote in Arabic, Arab philosophy and Arabic poetry, the Jewish philosophers of that era, especially in Spain, gave tikkun a new service, and they applied it to self-development, to human self-development, to the quest for perfection or for becoming a more perfect person, for self-actualization, for moral, for spiritual improvement. So there's a great Spanish poet, Shlomo Ibn Gavirol, who wrote a book called Tikkun HaMidot, The Improvement of the Moral Values, the Moral Virtues. Our teacher, Kali Ahana, Carolyn Isaacs, is here with us, and she teaches a wonderful program on Musar that looks at the Midot. So improvement of the virtues. There was another Tikkun HaGuf, the great sage Maimonides, wrote about the Tikkun of the body. He was also a physician, and he put a lot of emphasis on physical health. So we have moral health, physical health. And then the most prevalent use of the term in this period is Tikkun HaNefesh. We could translate as perfection or improvement, restoration of the soul. But in Hebrew, we're lucky because we have five different words that refer to non-material being. And just as we do in English, we have energy, spirit, soul, being, essence. We have a lot of words in English. In Hebrew, we have a system that we've inherited from the Kabbalists of 500-600 years ago or more. And in that system, the nefesh is the most immediate soul energy, life vitality. It's the soul that animates the body. You know it's there. Our dear neighbor has a little chihuahua named Nefesh. And Nefesh is sort of that exciting, animating life spirit. And of course, we see it when we're in the presence of someone who dies, a human or another living creature. You know, we know there are moments when the body stops working and that animating life spirit departs. We have four other terms for soul and spirit that are not dependent so much as much on the physical body. Bye-bye, Meg. Got your note. Thank you for joining us. And please feel better. I hope your pneumonia, I hope you recover from your pneumonia. Take it easy. Drink lots of tea. So Tikkun HaNefesh becomes, for Maimonides, it becomes the restoration of the physical, the moral, and spiritual health. Sort of the whole package of who you are. And this is very important in the medieval period. We fast forward 1,000 years, and just as the term Tikkun Olam gets repurposed in recent decades, the term Tikkun Nefesh has also been repurposed in recent decades, especially by North American Jews, many of us under the influence of non-Jewish spiritual traditions and other kinds of spiritual practices. So it's common now to use Tikkun Nefesh to refer to, you know, work on the self, development of self, the full range of spiritual practices of what you do to nourish yourself. As opposed to what you do for out there, for the world at large, what you do for in here. And Meg gave us this transition because she discovered, oh, this crept into her Tikkun Olam list. She had some Tikkun Nefesh in her Tikkun Olam list. So I'll invite you, with the other side of your paper, just to take a few minutes and think about what are the activities of your life? Where have you invested your time and energy for self-development, intellectual development, physical, moral, spiritual? And what are the things that you've done? They could be formal religious activities, or they could be completely informal. They could be going to yoga class, climbing a mountain, getting your PhD, any number of things. Okay? So just take a little time to make yourself a list of Tikkun Nefesh, the Tikkun of the life energy.
Yeah, I believe in love. Yeah, bye.
Like to share anything on your list, your tikkun nefesh, your nest for the soul list, your nurturance of self list. Please don't be shy. When we share, we encourage and inspire others because none of us are doing everything the same, and other people will be inspired by what it is that you're doing. Would anyone like to speak?
I'll share.
Rosara, please do.
Hi. First, I'd just like to say this is my first time reaching out to the Jewish community in Eureka since I've been here for a year. And it's so, so lovely. And I'm so grateful that I have. It just seems like a really wonderful group. And my tikkun nefesh, one of them would be taking the time to cook good food and source good ingredients and nourish myself in that way.
Lovely. Lovely, lovely. Thank you for sharing that. Cooking the food and sourcing the ingredients. I love that that's come into the popular lingos that people are talking about. Yeah, where do you source your ingredients? Not just where do you buy it, where do you get it, but the idea that you're going to the source somehow. You want to think about what is the source of what you're
eating. Right. We're lucky in our area of the world to have so many local producers and markets.
Yeah, we're super lucky. Great. Thank you for sharing. And please join us for more events. And I especially want to emphasize to everybody, of course, this is organized. Temple Bethel is supporting, but this is mostly organized by 350, our wonderful local branch, 350 Humboldt. And if you haven't gotten involved, please do. Please do. Wonderful organization. Thank you, dear. Anybody else want to share? Let me go back, see if I see any other people. To share, Eve, I see your hand, dear. Would you like to share?
I would like to. I'm not sure I can. I wanted to share when we did the last and folks were showing artwork that they did. And I have a piece of artwork that seems to fit just with what we're talking about. And I'd like to share it, but I'm not sure what the best way to do so is. I have it on my computer, catched in my pictures. And probably I'm thinking the easiest way I could do this is go into the video component, and instead of my photograph of my waterfall being as a background, to put this as one of the backgrounds and then just move out of the way and let you look at it. So I'm going to give that a try while you, you know, do connect with whatever, you know, whoever else wants to.
Eve, you could try just to share your screen.
How do I do that?
Oh, well. maybe we'll have you do it your way since you don't know how. Might be it's not
how difficult is it. I'll give it a try.
There's a setting, it says share screen, you have to click on that and
okay, share screen. Multiple participants, advanced sharing options.
No, I think we'll have to try it the other way.
I'll try the other way, yeah. I'm sure there's an easier way, but I don't know how to get there from here. So let me give that one a try then. Okay, choose virtual background. Okay, plus. Add image.
While Eve is searching and setting up, I'm going to encourage everybody, spread your wings. Oh,
okay.
Oh,
what it's called, hang on just a moment. Oh dear. Okay. It's called Unanticipated Good.
Eve, it's magnificent. Just lean close and tell us the title and then back away.
Unanticipated Good.
Beautiful. Unanticipated Good is the name of this marvelous piece.
So, any rate.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Beautiful, beautiful. I would love for you to send it to me.
Oh, I can do that. Attachment.
I would love to have it.
That I do know how to do.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, dear. That's magnificent.
Oh.
That's beautiful. So let me see if anybody else wants to speak. And I heard that
bye-bye, Marjorie. Naomi. It looks like Marjorie has raised her hand.
Okay. Marjorie, dear?
No, I didn't. I didn't mean to.
Nope. She didn't mean to. Anybody else have anything on your list of that may have surprised you? Anne, I see your hand there. Anne, would you please unmute yourself?
Yes. Well, when I really feel like I need a lift, I work out a way to do something, to stretch, to do something that I wasn't really at all sure that I could pull it off, some way that, you know, something beneficial, not something mischievous, but stretch. That's it.
That's it. That's wonderful. That's wonderful to just stretch, to take a risk for it, to expand the sense of self. That's delightful. That's delightful. Thank you, Anne. Anybody else have anything on your Tikkun Nefesh list you would like to share?
Well,
my sister Deva is showing us. Deva, you need to make sound so we can get you on speaker view. She is showing you the wool that she cards. She cards the wool and spins the yarn and wins blue ribbons at the county fair. And also dyes it in her spare time. You see that she's an anthropologist and collects a lot of papers there. But she's also a spinner. And that's her.
The next one is Laura.
And there's some dyed black.
No, this is natural.
Great.
Natural.
Yes, that's the natural. That's the natural black. It's the natural black, of course, of course. Beautiful. Beautiful. Handwork. Beautiful handwork. So good for the soul. Thanks, sweetheart. Thank you. Did Cindy want to share? I see Cindy somewhere.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I find journaling very helpful. Just writing about how I'm feeling or what's happening. Just for myself, just the writing. That's something I like to do.
Wonderful. Anybody else want to share there? All right. So both you might now, you look at your list and you see, oh, I've got a column over here and I got a column over here. Now, we want to, you know, as we move through the years, we want more and more to feel that we are whole people, that we are integrated, that we haven't compartmentalized our life. So as much as we can, we want to feel, look at your list and see in what way do all those Tikkun Olam activities kind of flow over into Tikkun Nefesh, and in what ways do those care of the self activities flow over into the care of the world activities. And I think as we move through many years of conscious activism and of conscious spiritual practice, we feel greater and greater harmony in those spheres. And ideally, we feel less of a tear of, oh, I'm tearing, I'm pulled away. Oh, I really want to meditate today, but this thing, this grant proposal is due. I'm going to skip meditating today. Oh, I wish I could meditate. Or I've got to get this project done, but I'm not going to do it. Instead, I'm going to go to my yoga class. You know, remember when we went to yoga classes? It was so wonderful. It will happen again. So sometimes we feel torn. We say, betwixt, am I doing this for myself? Am I doing this for the world? And ideally, the more of each of those kinds of activities we do, we see that they're just different orientations, but it's all building an energy of restoration and of tikkun, of deep tikkun. And I do want to suggest just some talkless ideas. Talkless is just sort of nuts and bolts, some tips. I think it's very important for us to consciously blend these two spheres of activity, to bring the social justice projects into what we might call spiritual activity. I know that there may be some spiritual projects that would turn toward emptying the mind and leaving other thoughts behind. A very Jewish way is to bring it all in, just to have it all in your life of prayer and your life of contemplation, to bring it all in. So you're working on an important project, or you have a challenging adversary, you bring it into your inner life. And the more deeply you can do that, I feel the better off you are. In the introduction, Katie was kind enough, she referenced my work in the headwater struggles from many years ago. And I know that many of you here on the call were involved in those efforts. And it was so especially challenging for me because right here in Carlotta where I live, that my property line is from my home, it borders Pacific Lumber Company, the old Pacific Lumber, which then of course was Maxam and now is Humboldt Redwoods. And so in those very difficult Maxam years, I would literally look out my window, in addition to seeing trees falling and the logging and all the helicopters for all those terrible years of helicopter logging, which just pulls trees off slopes that are so steep they shouldn't be logged anyway. In those years, to avoid becoming bitter, I took up a practice that I learned from my friend Muggy Gitzak Bucks, Mamalapa Sholem, a great teacher who just passed away last month, and a practice of praying for the adversary. So to keep your heart soft and to stay tender and to stay hopeful, because Charles Fritz was somebody who could very easily be demonized. He fit a lot of really unfortunate stereotypes, and he said and did some really reprehensible things. So if I didn't want to develop a hatred and animosity toward him as my immediate neighbor and an adversary in this effort, I just had to pray for him. And I prayed for him every day for years and years and years. May Mr. Hurwitz be healthy. May he be happy. May his family be healthy and happy. May he come to his senses and just straighten up and fly right, do the right thing, you know. May he listen to us. May he suddenly get a conscience, you know, all of those things. But prayed really with a whole heart for his welfare. So I was able to keep from falling into the trap of just cringing when I would hear his name. Instead, I felt actually a closeness that our destinies were sort of tied. And many years later, I heard that a terrible tragedy had struck his family. And when I heard about this tragedy, I spontaneously started to cry. I started to weep. And I was amazed at myself. And I realized I had endeared him to me in a certain way by praying for him all those years, so that I, despite all the things he did wrong, I could really empathize with his loss. And that's just the power of the practice. It was just a very powerful practice. I tried to do it during the Trump years. I did my best. I prayed for all of them, for the whole Trump family. I tried. It was not easy, and I don't feel it was as successful. But thank God it didn't go on as long as I prayed for Charles Hurwitz. So bring your social and environmental justice concerns into your prayer practice. Bring it into the yoga room. Breathe it through. Let it, you know, yeah, you try to let it drain out of your body, but then breathe it through, really experiencing it. Bring it into your prayer. Bring it into your meditation. Bring it into your music. Bring it into your art. Bring it into all of these things. My dear husband. And the other side of the coin is that I feel that it's very important for us as progressive Americans with activist ideals. And Hank is saying to everyone, I like this, I prayed for Trump and his family. I don't know that it gave me warm feelings, but I'm sure it was so. So another aspect of this work that I feel is very important is that we need to bring our spiritual practices and our spiritual orientation into the public sphere when we're engaging in these social and environmental justice campaigns. Temple Bethel has a social justice group. And we have a nice big banner with phrases from the Hebrew Bible, you know, justice, justice, you shall pursue, love your neighbor as yourself. And I'm really proud of our group when something is happening and people need to show up in person, people show up and carry our, excuse me, carry our banner. And similarly, for meetings, you know, you go to a meeting and it could be all nuts and bolts and all business, but you might say to your companions at the meeting, you know, I have a practice of making a blessing or saying a prayer or having some moments of heartfelt silence. And would you like me to lead us in that? You know, just say, let me lead us in that. Valerie has a beautiful meditation bell for the Sangha, you know? So the meditation bell can be good for 350 meetings also. We want to try to bring those things in a very light-hearted, you know, soft touch kind of way. But it's really important because in America, you know, the religious right has sort of claimed a lot of religious ground. And we need to make it clear that they don't have an exclusive access to religious thinking. And that spiritual and religious thinking exists across the political spectrum. And part of that is not being afraid, ashamed, or embarrassed to bring that practice into the public sphere or into a business-like setting. I found it very moving how much we heard after the insurrection about the sacred temple of democracy, about the sacredness of democracy itself, the sacredness of justice. This is all what religious studies scholars call civil religion. Even for people who don't have any particular religious cosmology of their own, there's certain things that we say, we hold these truths to be self-evident and we treat them as sacred. So it was good. I appreciated hearing that, and I appreciated hearing a good amount of that at the inauguration. I think in front of the reflecting pool the day before, when they led that beautiful memorial for the people who have died of COVID, there was somebody said, here we are in front of the sacred pool. And then the concert that night at the Lincoln Memorial with this beautiful Daniel Chester French statue of Lincoln lit up at night as it is. And that's as close as we get to an all-American temple, something where we can just look at this beautiful image and be uplifted. So I really encourage that. I think that our social and environmental justice organizing work is truly an expression of our spirit. And we just need to reclaim that spirituality in the public sphere. Of course, it's very exciting when someone like Reverend Warnke is elected, and he can help bring some of that back, bring some of that into our community. I have another little idea about Tikkun Olam I want to share with you before we start to close. And that's something I skimmed over in the history. We went 1,000 years back, and then we went 2,000 years back. But if we go back just about 500 years, we're in the time of the Jewish Kabbalists, the Jewish mystics. And for the mystics, the olam, the world that needs to be tikkun, that needs to be Warnock, excuse me, Warnock, I said Warnocky. I Hebraized his name. Warnocky, Warnock. Oh, slicha, I'm so sorry. Thank you, Roz. She's my wonderful proofreader, Reverend Warnock. And his good friend, Rabbi Warnocky. Little ethnocentrism here. Okay, so the Kabbalists say, what is the world that needs tikkun? It's the world of the spirit. It's the spiritual realm. The spirit in the Jewish mystical system are emanations of divine energy. They're literally the channels through which divine energy reaches us here in our reality. And for the Kabbalists, their view is that as we do spiritual practices, as we progress, that we are actually affecting tikkunim, affecting realignments, readjustments between the worlds, between the terrestrial realms and the celestial realms. And that the goal of Tikkun Olam, according to the Kabbalists, is not only to restore harmony here in this world, but to restore kind of a cosmic harmony between all worlds. And that's a very chutzpahdik thing to add to your practice. I see Anne nodding. It's kind of chutzpah to think. Chutzpah is the Jewish term, of course, for like presumptuous. It's a very presumptuous thing to think, oh, when I do this, I'm effecting some beautiful realignment. I'm building a nest, not just in our sphere, but in all worlds, and all the worlds that ever existed and all that ever will. But it's a beautiful idea. So I didn't want to skip over it and not include it. There's a little story, a little Hasidic story of a seeker goes to the Rebbe and says, Rebbe, I really want to learn from a great soul, from a really great being. You know, at whose feet should I sit? With whom should I study? And the Rebbe thinks about it and strokes his beard. They always had beards back then. I have a little beard envy myself, I must say. He strokes his beard and he thinks about it. Yeah, all you guys with beards, help me out here. Help me. I see my beard strokers out there. Thank you. They stroke their beard. Thanks, Pat. And he says, I know. Go down to this little village, and in this little village, there's a tailor named Shloimela, and you should go and find that tailor Shloimela and study with him. The student thinks, what? I'm going to learn from a tailor? Oh, no, excuse me. He's a cobbler. He's not even a tailor. He's a cobbler. He's a shoemaker. From a shoemaker, I'm going to learn something? Really? What am I going to learn from a shoemaker? So he finds the little village. He goes, he knocks on the door. Cobbler welcomes him in. What can I do for you? Do you have shoes that need to mend? The cobbler, of course, immediately looks at his shoes to see what is he wearing or what does he have in his package. He doesn't have a package and his shoes look in pretty good shape. So what could he possibly want with me? Thinks the cobbler. And the man comes and he explains, well, the great Rebbe of thus and such a city sent me here to study with you because I want to learn from someone who has the real deep spiritual knowledge. And the tailor, of course, is completely astonished and says to him, I have nothing to teach you. I am unlettered. I'm so embarrassed. I never really even learned to read properly. I'm not, you must be looking for some other tailor, shoemaker. He says, no, you're the one. He says, well, okay, I'm not going to teach you, but you can just sit here and watch as I do my work. So the man sits down and he watches and he's thinking there's got to be some secret mystery here. And the cobbler is punching holes in the leather and he's preparing the sinews, the strings for binding up the leather and the material. And the student is thinking, I am really wasting my time. What am I doing here? But as he sits and he watches the cobbler slowly, patiently working, he starts to look around and he sees the cobbler's home. And the cobbler's home is an exercise in simplicity. There's nothing there but the bare necessities. And the student who is from a big yeshiva, he's pretty well off. He starts to feel what it's like to sit in an impoverished home. He looks around, he sees, everything in this house is pretty worn out. And look, the cobbler's clothes are kind of threadbare. He looks on the cupboard. He sees, there's not much food here on the cupboard. And he realizes that he's in the presence of poverty. And when he really encounters the presence of poverty in the cobbler's home, something touches his heart. He's moved to a kind of sympathy that he hasn't felt before. Before, Taking care of the poor was an idea for him, a lofty goal. And now he really feels in his heart what it's like to be on the bottom end of the deal in this life, to get the worst out of life. So he starts to weep. And as he cries in sympathy for the cobbler, something is washed clean in his soul, and he is able to see that something amazing is happening. And the cobbler is singing a little song, and he puts the needle in, and he's connecting the sole of the foot to the shoe itself. And he says, needle in, through, needle in, pull it through, needle in, pull it through, needle in, pull it through. And the student doesn't understand why he is so moved. He says to the cobbler, what are you doing? This is so moving. This is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. This little hovel somehow feels like it's filled with radiance as I'm watching you. You're putting the boot on the sole. What is going on? And the cobbler says, I'm just stitching together the lower and the upper. I'm stitching the upper to the lower. I'm stitching the lower to the upper. I'm stitching the upper to the lower. I'm stitching the lower to the upper. And when he hears this, the student who has studied a lot of Kabbalah knows that he's in the presence of one of the Lamed Vavnikim, one of the hidden saints whose holiness is so hidden that it's hidden from themselves. And he realizes that the cobbler has such a beautiful kavana, such a beautiful intention, that he's stitching the realms together. He's stitching together this terrestrial realm that we call earth. He's stitching it to the higher realm that we call heaven. And that as he sits there assembling the boot, he is doing tikkun olam ha'elyon. He is doing a tikkun on all the spheres of reality because he's so connected, because he's so attuned. So we want to have a little bit of holy chutzpah and be attuned and think, now what can we connect? So I have two songs to share before we say good night. First, a Yiddish song. We made a little bit of this song earlier. And, you know, let me see. I put it in the chat earlier, the refrain. And let me see if I find the chat and I put it in again now. Those of you who came after I put it in the chat will be able to see the words for the refrain. It's a song about Mashiach. I got it. Okay, I'm copying this. Do, 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 do. I got it. Copy. And now I'm going to put it in the chat for everyone. Did I get it? Yes, I think I did. So if you look in your chat, you will see the refrain. Oy amen, va amen. So amen is a way of saying amen, oy amen. Oy amen, va amen, das is vor, this is true. Mashiach vekumen, the Messiah is coming, heintix yor, this very day. So the verse is very simple and it says, shnere lepere la gildre nachon, with ribbons, with strings of pearls, with golden flags. The Mashiach, the transforming presence, sits over us. You know, this is an older kind of metaphor for us, but a beautiful metaphor from several hundred years ago. Sits over us as if on a throne, halter a becher, and holds a glass, especially holds a goblet, in the right hand, in his right hand. And the right hand in Kabbalah is associated with chesed, with tender loving kindness. holds a goblet in the right hand as if it overflows, like Kosi Revaya, as if the cup overflows with kindness. Und macht a brocha auf dem ganzen Land, and makes a blessing on the whole world. So that's the one verse I have. So we want to have this in beautiful, beautiful old image of Mashiach consciousness evolving. And this is it, that this consciousness will come this year. You want to have that sense of immediacy. And as we learned, the shtickla is always coming forward. We're always adding our shtickla.
Gil der Reform, Mashiach ben David, Zitzor ben On, Halta Bechem in der Rechte Hand, und Machta Abracha, auf dem ganzen Land. Oi, oi, mein, wo, oi, mein, was ist wo? Mashiach, wer kommen, heim, tix, jo. Oi, oi, mein, wo, oi, mein, was ist wo?
Piece. We have to, the Temple Beth El Choir has to learn that one. That's one we have to learn. And I think, let's see, is Dan still here? Our dear Dan Chandler here? Yes, okay, Dan is still here. Then I can't get off the hook because Dan said to me, I hope he'll do a Sephardic song. And Dan, of course, is a master of that music and knows it better than I do. And I thought, oh gosh, what Sephardic song will suit this program, because most of those songs, of course, are love songs. And I was so fortunate, I was able to take a Jewish study tour of Spain last winter, right before the shutdown. Now, I travel very little, and probably worrying about my carbon footprint, I will travel even less in the future. But I did get to retrace the steps of the Kabbalists and the great Jewish philosophers in Spain and Catalonia, and wow, what a fabulous experience. It really was wonderful. So here's a song in the Ladino language, which is a love song, but I realized, this is appropriate for the moment because it's a song of the sorrow of immigration and lost love. The text is so beautiful. It says, the trees cry for rain and the mountains cry for wind. This is why my eyes cry. They cry for you, my dear beloved one. I think and I say, what will become of me in a foreign land I cannot live? You are fair skinned, you are dressed all in white, your figure is all white, this beautiful marriage image, white flowers fall because of your beauty. Very beautiful, lush image. I think and I say, what will become of me in a foreign land I cannot live? I'm thinking of my great uncle. My volume is lowering, Pat said. All right, I'll keep my voice up. Is that good? that good? Is that better? Ah, it's getting a little too soft. My great uncle Alexander of blessed memory left Russia and during the time of the revolution and ended up coming here as an immigrant to America. And I remember the story that he left his true love behind in Russia and never saw her again. So this song touches me in that way, thinking of Uncle Alex. He loved to sing. He sang beautiful Russian folk songs. I have a recording somewhere I made of him singing this big bass voice. So here, Arvoles, and I consider myself a beginning guitarist. So for you instrumentalists who are still here, I'm trying to learn a new chord, and if I hit it right, it's divine intervention. And if not, I'll just need to keep practicing. My B minor chord. I learned it especially for this event. I said, I got to do this song for Dan, and I have to have a B minor chord, and God damn it, I can learn something new. And I did. So it's been a total delight to have you all with us. Can you please, Pat and Val, can you unmute so anybody can say whatever they want to say? We can just say our good nights or any messages you have for each other. And please, if you're not already signed up for the 350 newsletters, please, please, please sign up for 350.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was so terrific.
Lovely, Naomi. Thanks.
Beautiful.
Thank you, Rabbi Naomi.
Thank you.
What time is it in Jerusalem?
It's 7 in the morning. this event went from 5 to 7.
You got up at 5 in the morning for this. You are
for
amazing.
You. For oh, you, geez. I'd go a million miles.
Beautiful evening.
My love your music.
Thank you so much. That painting is just. Can you please send me the print?
Yes, very gorgeous, Marjorie.
Thank you. Thank you.
The whole world needs to see that picture. Great. And I want to thank Katie and Val and Pat for hosting and doing all the organizing. Really a treat. And thank you all so much for listening. It's really, it's a lovely challenge to put together a program like this. To take ideas that I think of as so very Jewish, yet universal, and make them accessible for other people. So Dan, thank you for your thank you. So glad you're there. And I got a Sephardic song in for you. Hey, thank you for asking. Thank you.
Right. Good night, Rabbi.
Good night.
Good
night. Hey, Lila Tov. And just a little pitch, we have a beautiful Jewish music festival coming up with Temple Bethel. Go to our website and get all the info. Great. Mwah. Thank you all. Good night. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing. Deeper and deeper. Deeper and deeper. Onward, onward. Onward, deeper and deeper. Lily Price. Lily, is this my Lily from HSU class? I just saw your name. Lily! Lily! Hey! Hi! Wow, where are you?
I'm in Humble. I'm in Richmond.
Oh, wonderful! Well, I'd say come and see me, except, well, you have come to see me. Great.
Oh, yeah.
Great. And what are you doing here, dear?
Oh, what did you say? Sorry.
Are you still in? You finished school, didn't you? Are you still in school?
I have one more semester.
One semester. Lily was in one of my Jewish studies, religious studies classes at HSU. Oh, so nice to see you.
Thank you so much, Naomi. This is
so you're very welcome.
And Lily was our intern at the UU Fellowship. Nice to see you, Lily.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Great to see you. Great to see you. Okay. Come to some more things. Lovely to see you. Great. 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 Okay. Good night, folks. Dan, thank you so much for the invitation. It was really fun to just put these ideas in order. And I did a little research on this and that. And that was fun for me.
Well, it was great for us. Thank you.
Great. Okay.